He's got a beard he can rub up on the... Yep, see? Knew that was coming.
Oh,
sorry.
God. Oh, no. My ASMR is so triggered. Anyway. Thank you for joining us once again on the Delco Young Democast. My name is Mike DeEva. It is awesome to talk to you guys again. We are live from the podcast Oubliette in the hottest frigging possible room.
It's not that bad.
I'm a sweaty monster.
It's not that bad.
Sorry, listeners. I'm very glad this is not video. Anyway, joining us today, as you've heard, Amanda Hammack, how you doing?
I'm good. Actually, I am good.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I'm very glad to hear that.
Considering the way that maybe things have gone, but no, I'm good. I'm good.
Awesome,
it's nice and warm out there, which is why it's warm in here, right?
I'm so mad about it.
I know. It's okay.
I just talked to my wife about putting the air conditioner on, and she said I was insane, which may be true.
Awesome. I agree with Amanda always.
Fair.
Fair. It's good.
She's usually right. Also joining us for the first time today, Mr. Noah Fields.
Hey,
how you doing?
Good to be here.
Awesome to have you here.
Yeah.
As the youngest young Dem.
Yeah, I'm actually not even a Democrat because I'm too young.
Technically, yeah.
Well, will you be able to vote for...
Not for the primary.
Not the primary.
No, but in the general.
Yeah. I'll be 18 a month after the election.
Awesome. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah, so that'd be cool. I have to make sure I get my birth certificate taken care of. I seem to have misplaced that.
That's important.
And so, yeah, that would help. But it's okay. I'm on it.
I mean, I can see that you exist, but like...
Yeah, no, I was in fact born at one point. It's just in order to get any important document ever to do anything with your life, you should probably have your birth certificate. And
that's
proven itself to be true these past couple months when I've tried to get the ball rolling on stuff. And I'm like, birth certificate.
So we try to, every time we have somebody new come on the show for the first time, we try and have you just talk a little bit about like how you got involved.
Okay,
so,
yeah,
you know,
sure.
I kind of know, but for the people out there.
Yeah. Well, it's been a while really that I've been attentive to the political process and the arena. Technically in 2008, I made a couple phone calls for Obama. I wouldn't say I was a campaign staffer or anything like that, but...
How old would you have been at that point?
Eight. I was... No, seven.
Seven years old.
Yeah, I may have been eight, actually. And then my grandmom ran for school board, lost by a very small percentage in 2013. My dad ran for township council, and that was a little bit of a painful situation because we knew that there was going to be a problem with the absentee ballots. And the night of the election, it was, we're up by 50 points, but they're going to count. And we pretty much had an idea that this is going to be eked out on the opponent's side, which it was by 10 votes.
Wow.
Yeah. 1380 to 1370. So, it happens next time.
Yeah.
And so, I think it's really interesting and stimulating. And so that's kind of why, I pay attention and I enjoy this type of stuff.
Nice. Any desire to kind of pursue it in college or anything? Or no?
Yeah. I do a lot with music at my high school, but I'd like to keep that active and part of my life. But I'm going to major in political science and pair it with something along the lines of an urban development.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Community work and stuff to make the area better.
I always feel bad when I talk to people who are actually motivated to do shit.
don't worry about it. I mean, if you saw me at home, I'm just... It feels so good to just lay down on your phone all day and not be productive.
You
really are your worst enemy in that case.
Does that happen?
While you still can.
Yeah. It's reassuring to know the Obamas and everybody got the ball rolling, well into their teenage years. So that makes it a little more less daunting trying to, be a smart person. Have time to read and get good at stuff.
But you sitting there, I think of my oldest, my 14-year-old, And I go, how many times have I, like, drug him out to, like, you know, hand out lit and, you know, things like that. Yeah, so then hearing it from you, though, is kind of cool because I'm like, I wonder if he's going to be like that, you know. Either that or he's going to be like, forget this and I'm done.
I was about to say, either that or he's going to be like his grandma. Yeah. Like, Phyllis Fields is one of my favorite human beings on the planet.
Yeah, we actually look the most alike. so that's reassuring.
Can I ask her that tomorrow?
Please don't. No.
Does grandma listen to this?
No,
because
then she just, she might very well. So let's edit all this out. No. well, you know, it's fun. She'll just straight up, like, I'll be with my older brother and my younger brother, and she goes, oh, you're my favorite grandson because you look the most like me. Oh, and I'm just like, oh, sorry, guys. Jesus, I don't really know how to.
Thanks,
she likes
grandma.
As do I. So it's just something that.
So wait, you're in the middle?
I am. I am indeed a middle child.
So do they just, like, you know, get you from both ends when that happens, you know?
No.
Right. My brother and I get along. Both my brothers and I get along very well. No, there's
are
no
they,
rivalry.
Are, now,
rivalry.
Are they engaged?
Yes, my older brother, he, you know, I'm sure he'll be on sometime, so I don't want to, you know.
Ruin it. But
yeah,
he,
I
want to
let him
engaged.
Speak for himself. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah, he, yeah, he's, it's always a discussion in our house, you know, how it
I love that.
Out.
I love that.
You know, and, yeah, yeah, I'll let him speak for himself if he's ever on.
Cool. And what about now? What thunder. About the younger one? Does he get? You know, like
my
you're
little
coming
one,
in...
you, he was just upstairs actually. Yeah, he's 10, so I don't know anything about him. No, I'm just kidding.
You know, like, I haven't seen you for 10 years.
He's just a little kid.
Do you have
know?
A birth
so
certificate?
So I'm sure we'll. Yeah, yeah.
Oh my god.
Let me see it now.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
I would be very angry at your parents about that.
So that's the lose two birth certificates.
Thanks, Dad.
That's the rundown on the
awesome.
Fields clan.
Awesome, awesome, awesome.
We're taking
I love it.
Over. No, I'm just kidding.
I mean, I can think of worse people.
Yeah, yeah. We're not in it for the money. It's
exactly.
We're in it for power. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
Oh, man. That was a really good creepy whisper.
Yeah, these are like the best ASMR like mimic microphones around. Please, okay.
I'm going to pop bubble wrap directly into the microphone for 45 minutes.
The worst part is we can't get away from this.
No,
this is how
no.
It's gonna
no,
be,
we're
right?
trying to get the ball rolling with this, and it just started back up.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about something
yeah.
people want to hear right. about.
Let's talk about, I was, as listeners may have heard, on vacation with producer Ernie, kind of handling things back here in the U.S. So I was... unfortunate enough to miss the nominating convention for Congressional District 5.
I didn't.
I know both of you guys were there. So
yes,
how
we
did
were.
That go?
It was very interesting.
I was just going to say... like,
is that the first nominating convention you've been to, Noah?
Yeah, I guess it was. Yeah.
Amanda, I know it's not the first one you've been to.
You know...
Well, it was interesting to see how that process worked. I mean,
right.
I'd known of Robert's rules, but I didn't know the intricacies that I learned.
You know what?
In fairness,
think...
neither did like most of the party.
So to be fair, I think that should clearly. Be that should be the thing that we do. Going through the doors, everyone should just get a copy of Robert's Rules of Order.
In fairness, right
that's a really
through.
Good point.
I've got one upstairs,
no,
and it's super long and boring.
Okay, then I'm sure there's an idiot's guide to Robert's Rules,
well,
and we could maybe hand that out. I don't know.
You know, there were a lot of people throughout the night trying to make inquiries. I'm like, wait, how does this work? And it was just like, shut down and shut up, you know? Like,
well,
it was
and the amount of, I don't know.
From the more experienced committee people that were present.
Really?
Yeah, you know,
I just
family
was
members
probably...
that were guilty of it, you know? Like, you know, not...
I was just stared at really angrily for most of the night, so that was probably, you know.
I mean...
It's okay. I'm fine with it. So let's go with what was good. A lot of new people got to see
yes.
how
yeah.
process works.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's
always
good.
A positive, yeah.
Yeah.
Was it maybe the... if that was their first experience, perhaps also frightening for them?
Yeah.
Probably.
Getting
most
tossed
definitely,
into the deep end, yeah.
There were no fights. Like, fist fights. There were no fist fights. That's a pro,
I
right?
I mean, when you get that many people together in Delco, you always got to be worried about that.
I was kind of shocked.
Possibility.
I think that probably was more people at that one than there was at the first one. So
oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it was at a different venue. It was the Upper Darby Performing Arts Center,
which, by the way,
school.
Is beautiful.
Oh, that place is amazing.
Yeah, it's a great venue.
And they almost shut the arts program down here a couple of years ago. Anyway,
shame on them for that. Yeah. And that just that space is beautiful, and mm-hmm. I'm super mm-hmm. jealous of it. Mm-hmm. So, what other pros?
I think people didn't leave that. I mean, maybe right after it, they left it feeling like, oh, you know, I'm pissed off and I'm royally angry, you know. But I think people are like, okay, you know, we didn't get an endorsed candidate, but then that forces people to read about all the candidates. Because just I feel like a lot of people had the mindset of we need to do this endorsement because there's a certain candidate from South Philly who's evil and he's a GOP installment. Whether that's true or not, which, you know, you just have to read on the candidates, you know, and that forces everybody to do this to make a more
does
educated...
Does he live under a bed?
Yeah, right. You know, is he a boogeyman?
In the closet.
In the closet.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
All I think of is Monster Inc.
Yeah, I was about to say he's voiced by Steve Buscemi, yeah.
Yeah. And I'm not saying that at all, you know.
Right.
I just think it forces people to be more attentive and to make their own decision.
Which is interesting because I think that's also the reason why the attendance was so high,
yes.
You know, was to make sure that, you know, people were either voting for their candidate or maybe voting against a candidate. I honestly, as a committee person, I'm not entirely sure where that was. That being said, I think what I found most interesting were two things. So the first thing in that is even sitting and listening to other committee, either be it in my municipality or just kind of other mm-hmm. committee people's, there were a lot of people that really didn't understand the process. And that's kind of frightening to me because if you're a committee person, that's, you know, we're supposed to understand this because we're supposed to be being or to explain it, right?
In fairness, if nobody's ever explained it to them,
right.
Then it's very difficult for them to know what's going on or let alone explain it to other people.
100%. I had an older committee person, said, well, what if I don't want to vote in this round? And I was like, you've been doing this longer than me. Like, so, you know, that was kind of a huge eye-opener.
Something that the map allowed for people to do. They just, you know, oh, we're not going to win this. I'll just check out. And, you know, it ain't
right.
a thing, you know. But that's, you know, obviously how it isn't or should be. And we got a new map. And so, you know, it's going to be rocky. You know, it's going to seem disorganized, but people are coming to their conclusion and in a healthy way. And I think that we're going to see some serious growth, not just of the party, but the right ideologies behind the party.
Yeah, I definitely agree. You know, it seems like, you know, even though there was some frustration both there, again, I'm hearing this secondhand,
right.
but from sources I trust, like Amanda, even though there was some frustration there at the event,
right.
and even for a little bit afterwards,
absolutely.
You know, I think that at the end of the day, you know, the democratic process prevailed.
Right, and that's where I was going to go, you know, depending pro or con, I mean, everyone's heard me on this thing. I'm open primary, I'm sorry, you know, and
mm-hmm. yeah.
there were moments. Heather Boyd did a really fantastic, you know, explanation as to why she thought endorsements were, you know, a good thing.
Yes,
and
she absolutely
right.
did. Yeah.
And I was like, you know what? I respect that.
Both sides, you know, I think Vitaly.
Do you know who surprised me?
Who?
Not Vitaly. Arata. Arata, who did make a comment in stating that maybe a closed primary and making the choices for, and I'm paraphrasing all of it, that a closed primary or an endorsement would mean that we were being presumptuous in believing that we were the only representation of Delaware County that got to say, this is the person that everyone should vote for.
Yeah.
And I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
You know,
I think that's what Vitaly's opening remarks,
right.
you know, hit on, which was, look, we have all the ideologues of the party in this room. That's great. But it's not represented
right.
at all of your average voter in the slightest way.
The theory behind it is that if the committees are talking with their neighborhoods and their precincts, that they should be representative of those districts.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. However, you know, what you said earlier, how these are like, you know, the ideologues.
Mm-hmm.
These are the people that, you know, in a lot of cases have been living and breathing this stuff.
And I'm not saying that with a negative connotation.
No, absolutely not. Right. Absolutely not. You know, these are the people that live and breathe this stuff. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they may, you know, and I'm certain that there are people, you know, coming out of the woodwork for stuff like this who have been kind of absentee committee people. But at the same time, you know, a lot of them have been doing the work and, you know, talking with the people in their voting precincts and all.
Someone said to me, because I think I was one of two out of my own municipality that was huge for the open, you know, standing. You saw it went from voice vote and then, of course, it had to go to standing vote. Mm. And, you know, I think the first time you stand up for something like that, you're like, oh, everyone now knows where I am. But at the same time, mm-hmm. I'm like, ha, here I am. Well, mm-hmm. But someone said, you know, like, how can you stand for, you know, an open primary? And so then you have to go into this dialogue, which is great because this is a dialogue within one, you know, committee of, you know, committee people or committee persons and committee person. And I said, even if we walk out of here with an open primary, it's still our job.
Why don't we just explain real quick what closed and open primary means in the parameters?
Oh, yeah. Do you like how I'm like, damn it.
As far as like closed,
you know, we don't want
automatically assume everyone knows what we're talking about.
Yeah. We're not even necessarily talking about closed and open primaries, which is basically like who can vote
in
the primary.
Right. Endorsements.
But we're talking about endorsements, which is basically when we talk about an open primary, quote unquote, that means that the county party or whoever is in charge in this case
chooses not to endorse.
Yeah. In this case, the Delaware County Democratic Party decides not to endorse one specific candidate, mm-hmm. meaning that basically whoever wins the primary gets their support and they're going to basically, in theory, stay out of the primary part. If we had an endorsed candidate, like, you know, we had decided at the convention that this is the person that we want to support, you know, then that would have been the person who starts getting support now. And probably we would have a lot of the other candidates drop out of the race and possibly have a couple of people stay in for the primary.
Yeah.
So the reason why I like the non-endorsement end of this is I think it forces us to go out more as committee people and engaging in our community and our neighbors and knocking doors and, is it going to suck? You're going to have to take 10 pieces of literature or 12 or whatever number we're at right now. Yes, but I don't know.
And that's where, you know, it kind of, we can use our, I don't want to say expertise, but we can kind of vet that a little bit for folks, which is really kind of, you know, not to be drunk with power or anything like that. But, you know, we can kind of summarize what everybody stands for and say, you know, here are the people that I like the most. Here is a person that you might like more than me because they have, you know, this is sort of their, you know, primary focus, and that's something that, you know, from knowing you, the constituent in my neighborhood, I know that you're very concerned about.
Right.
Like my neighbor is a union worker, so, you know, the people who are very intrigued and interested in union matters, you know, might speak to him more than they would speak to somebody down the block.
And that's why I love that, you know. So again, I don't think it was the worst. I know for a fact it wasn't the worst that we have had in the county.
Well, and in terms of reaching an endorsement, it was all based off the fact that it's us against them.
Yeah.
But it isn't. You know, we're all in the same party, and we're all in the same team.
That was what bothered me at most.
It highlighted some of the inner battling that's going on. That's very dangerous.
Which, as long as it stays in the primary, I personally think it's good and healthy.
Mm-hmm.
But,
absolutely.
You know, the whole...
And I think typically it does, but people take that and they say, you know, no, this is going to spread over to the general. No, people are going to vote blue.
Yeah. Yeah, as a general rule, you know, as long as the person... And I've said this before on the show, I'm going to vote for a Democrat I agree with 80% of the time over a Republican I'm going to agree with 5% of the time.
Right.
Any day.
Right.
Would I like to have a Democrat that I agree with 95% of the time? Sure.
Right.
But, you know, that's what the primary process is for.
And thankfully, those circumstances aren't too likely anymore.
Exactly.
Usually it's pretty much always a Democrat. You know, you can get nitpicky, but they're always going to be right on more issues than, you know. And I don't want to have to say that. You know, that's not a situation I'd like it to be. And I'd like both parties to be in the reasonable boundaries that are presented, but they're just so not.
Yeah, that's not where the Overton window is now, unfortunately.
Yeah, and you can make an argument that it used to be.
Yeah, it absolutely has, but it's been yanked since probably the 90s. It's been yanked pretty far to the right.
Yeah, I mean, and you could look back in history and you could say, all right, well, the last really, you know, Republican who seemed to be in it for the good of the people was Ike. You know, I'm not just going to narrow it down like that.
Yeah.
Presidentially, maybe. That's a pretty good argument behind that. And stuff just got so volatile during the Clinton years. With all these scandals, and it just appeared they're killers, they're murderers, you know, and it took it somewhere where it probably shouldn't have gone, but I think something good will come of all of this.
Yeah, that's actually something Rachel Maddow from MSNBC says a lot in interviews, is that, you know, she's a hardcore liberal, which means she agrees almost completely with the 1960 Republican platform.
So, which is really how it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, so at the end of the day, you know, the way these conventions work is that you have multiple rounds of voting until you get down to one person or don't. What a lot of people...
And the purpose of the convention, which we should probably state just to be safe, was to endorse somebody for the 5th Congressional District of Pennsylvania.
Yeah,
there's 13, 14...
At that time, it was 14.
When the night began, there was 14, and then it got narrowed down to 12.
However, so, wait a minute. At that point, there were 14. However, Margot had removed herself from wanting to be nominated endorsed. Or so
which
technically it was only going at 13 people. And then as the night progressed...
And then, during the rounds that followed, Chauncey and then Beatty. And then in the days that followed, currently Murrough.
Yeah.
And so now it's down to 10?
10 people running.
Yes.
10 people running. Oh, yeah. We forgot about the top of the ticket. Teresa Wright.
Oh, yeah.
Who is still on. Yeah.
So at the actual convention itself, it ended up...
it was heated.
You know, it was interesting, including, I think there was a round where they stopped the voting in the middle that somebody could kind of like...
They did. Well, so it wasn't in the middle. It was an inquiry had gone up, and either the chairman didn't hear, or I'm not quite sure exactly how that transcribed, but the ballots had already gone out, and so they pulled the ballots back because there was, you know, disarray. And I'm sure if you ask one person, it's a different story. If you ask another person, it was a different story. And again, this is when you go back to being like, when you have... What was the count?
It was in the 500 early...
500 and something. When you have 500, you know, people all jazzed up already walking in here, you know.
Yeah.
Well, okay, in that instance, I was up close to the front. That guy, Landau, he'd heard him, and he looked. It's okay. I mean, those are the rules of the, you know, I didn't hear him, there's no way to prove. I mean, you can tell he looked and there were people, so
and that's why I said, so, like, some people are like, he didn't hear him. Other people were like, he heard him.
And that's just how these things work, and that's how that setting allows it to happen.
I don't think, so, you know what's funny? When you said about, you know, people, after they were done and, you know, leaving, they were like, I think the online forums caused more issues in the following 24 hours.
You know, they probably did, and I didn't read them.
You were very smart.
Yeah, you're a wise individual.
Because, you know,
I went back and looked a little bit.
In recent days, I've looked at the forums and stuff, and I feel like we're all calming down. And this is just, it's a primary, and we should treat it with, as we should any election, with intense reading on each candidate and make an educated vote.
100% agree. Mm-hmm. 100% agree on that. But I did get the sense that things were just very compounded after the fact. You know, there were groups that were angry that people were abstaining, and for that to be an argument, and, you know, that's my right. It was my right to abstain all 3 billion rounds if I wanted to, you know.
And the thing is that, like, a lot of people were angry in the days after, just because it was like, well, we called the convention to nominate someone, so we should have nominated someone.
Right. And I watched that, by the way. I watched people putting writing names, literally, that they probably had no will or want to actually endorse, but they just felt compelled to put a name there.
Yeah, which I don't...
Instead of abstain, which is...
And I get that a lot of the abstentions came from, you know, oh, well, my candidate was knocked out, so I, you know, I don't support anyone else enough to give them the
the advantage, you know, or the vote or
the
whatever.
Endorsement. Yeah.
And it was under my impression that that didn't become a real issue of, or thought issue of thought until Molly gave the direction to abstain. Now, that's not a criticism.
Yeah, no, no, no.
I'm just saying, as in the events that happened throughout the night, you know, yeah, that confusion happened when Chauncey, you know, dropped out of the race. It was like, oh, okay, hold on. That's where that incident happened.
Right.
Like, a person had motioned for, hold on, well, you know, it's, and the Mr. Landau said he hadn't heard it, which is completely fair. And so that's when the abstentions started taking over, so that there couldn't be a majority endorsement. That's when that was like, okay. So we're not going to, there's only going to be a plurality, and you can't endorse on that, especially in a convention.
Yeah, absolutely not.
And that'd be like a kiss of death. You know, Mary Gay was sitting in here earlier, and, you know, she, this isn't a secret. It was like, yeah, we, you know, you can't take that. Like, it's, you know, we got the most votes out of the night, but it wasn't a majority.
Yeah, yeah. And it would be a toothless endorsement if they decided to do that, which is why I'm glad they decided 55% of everyone who was there.
That was smart.
Yeah, that was definitely the right way to go.
And there's I think I said this earlier. I don't know if it was in this recording or
we've
another.
We've been here for like 4 hours already.
that 14. There is kind of a loud minority in certain circumstances.
No, and that absolutely does happen. But I think, at the end of the day, I think we as a Democratic Party came to the right decision to, you know, maintain the openness. The one thing that I wasn't nuts about was, you know, after the convention saying, well, these were the two top finishers. So that's kind of
very
almost
misleading.
Like a, yeah, almost like a de facto endorsement, which I wasn't nuts about.
I don't think that's the general takeaway, though.
You know. I do.
Really?
Oh, yes, I
mean,
do.
I saw a couple articles circulating, but I think people are like, okay, we just didn't endorse.
No, I think that it, and I'm going to just say the way that I'm going to say it, it was entitled that way, or not entitled, it was titled that way, the particular article, intentionally, because there's other ways that it could have been said, there were other ways it could have been written, it was entirely meant to be that way. It is what it is, and that's fine, that's the choice someone else gets to make, you know, but I didn't appreciate it for what it was. And there were a lot of people that didn't appreciate it for what it was.
Yeah. And again, this is all our personal opinion.
Right.
So like I said, I personally wasn't nuts about it. It wasn't the end of the world.
No.
You know, this is civil war now.
But I think a lot of voters are going to know that there's still 14 people that we can vote for. I was only saying that as somebody who's not, I'm involved, but less involved than you are.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so just as somebody in that situation,
and that's I think
away.
Where we get worked up sometimes, because
exactly.
we're so involved that
we're
like
too inside baseball.
Right,
yeah.
Right. You know, and you see all these little nuances and you're like, ah! And then you realize, you know,
oh, wait, this shit doesn't actually matter
to
civilians. Yeah.
Right.
Well, you know, that there's this
to a degree.
That silly
maybe.
Saying that, you know, every child is talking, you know, well, why don't you step in their shoes? But it's absolutely true. You know, it's you just gotta think for a second how someone else could possibly think.
Right.
Yeah. And that's with anything.
Yeah, yeah. And that's, it can get tough when you're like in the middle of like,
yeah,
you know,
get heated,
you've got like pies flying all across you in the middle of a food fight.
It's passionate and it's loud. And
Mike, I will tell you this, and
you
Gina,
want a pie now?
No. Gina can attest to it, and so can Pasquale. I was so like pouty that you weren't there.
Oh,
like,
man.
I literally was pouty you weren't there.
I was okay with it.
Because not only that,
Noah's right.
No. I had to nominate. So I had to get up and I had to give a speech. And you know how terrified I am, despite that I do this.
Yeah.
That's because nobody can see me, right? That's why this works. I was so terrified. And as I'm going in, I'm like, but where's Mike? Like, I have Gina and I have Pasquale. Mike's got to be in Italy. What the hell?
Sorry, not sorry.
No, I totally would have been in your shoes.
Yeah.
So, but, yeah.
No, all the speeches were pretty good, though.
You know what? They were. Believe it or not, I think, so
there
maybe
were,
that
there
was
a
pro.
There were a couple awkward stragglers where they're reading off their phones, and there was one.
You know what? I can kick you from this direction.
No.
Because I was reading off of mine.
But you weren't awkward reading from your phone.
Well, that's good.
I mean, in general, I think it's better to try and, you know, but, you know, whatever is most, you know.
Right. No, I get it. I get it. I'm going to throw my phone at you next time.
There were some people who were endorsed, like Margot. That whole situation was awkward because Barbara Ann didn't seem to know.
Right.
Barbara Ann Keffer was the person who was nominating her, and she was reading off her phone, which was fine, but it was like, it seemed like it was just coming in text message form that Margot was pulling out her name from the, and I don't know if it was planned or not, but it was just very awkward in the way that this person rescinded Margot's name from an endorsement that night.
Hmm.
I'm just kind of like, wait, why, yeah, that's what's going on here?
That doesn't make a lot of sense to me. And
you're supposed to be nominating someone. Why wouldn't just, so then in that case, why wouldn't anybody just get up? She's already on the ballot, right? Does that make sense?
It doesn't. It really doesn't to me.
You know what? To be fair, I don't think any of this makes sense anymore. I've given up making sense.
It's like the scene. It's like the Ether Binge scene in Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas is honestly what it's like. It's just, it's very bright and nobody can really walk straight.
I don't know. Well, at least they're not dinosaurs.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And we're getting way off.
Yeah, so I'm curious and excited to see how this primary ends. I really am.
Yeah, now people have to actually do some work to earn their votes.
Do we want to switch focus to a little more some national conversation?
Yeah, I mean, well, I want to kind of expand out slowly.
Okay.
So there was, you know, we talk about the local drama. Statewide, I want to yell and scream about Daryl Metcalf, who is just the fucking worst. We may have heard on the news about. House Bill 722, which is an anti-gerrymandering bill. Let's just real quick, like 2 minutes, talk about what gerrymandering is, because we've talked about it a bunch, and you know, I really want to make sure that we're kind of
say gerrymandering sucks.
Like. I mean, we can, but you know,
well, it's true.
And both sides do it.
Yeah,
let's
absolutely,
be honest.
Absolutely. But just to clarify exactly what we mean when we say gerrymandering, just because again, we're kind of like eyeballs deep in this stuff, but if for anybody that's not sure what gerrymandering actually is, every 10 years after the census, they redraw all the lines for your representative districts, all of the state house, state senate, all the congressional districts, all that kind of stuff. It all gets redrawn. And right now in most
states...
And
the goal is to match the demographics.
Exactly. There are rules that you're supposed to follow, like you're supposed to keep it as compact
of the
as
census.
Possible.
Yeah.
And you're supposed to have a certain number of people in there, and you're supposed to keep communities of interest, quote unquote, together. But you know, whatever.
I love
the
how
hell
many
that
times
means.
You've said "supposed to." By the way,
I've got
thing.
A case
it
of the
is,
supposed
it is
here.
Supposed to,
right?
And
it almost never is.
Yeah, gerrymandering is because this process is controlled by whoever is in control of the state legislature at that time, which over the past 10 to 20 years has been Republicans in a lot of places, including Pennsylvania, unfortunately. So what they do, and Democrats do this as well when they're in power. But
have
it's
you
been
seen
a lot
cities
less.
Everywhere?
Yeah, exactly.
Any city
yes,
in
I've
the country?
I've seen Philadelphia, yeah.
Any in every city ever.
But basically, they get to draw the lines, and more often than not, they draw the lines to keep their either themselves or, at the very least, their own party in power. Which is why you get all these weird fucking squiggly lines instead of it being nice and, like, compact and all kind of put together.
Blockish.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't even necessarily need to be like squares.
No, but it
should be. It
not
should follow
Donald kicking Goofy.
Yeah, it shouldn't be like Donald Duck kicking Goofy or
some
like
of the drawings really look like cartoon characters.
Exactly.
Warshacks.
The first one was up in Massachusetts back in the 1800s, and there was a politician named Elbridge Gerry, who. That's the actual pronunciation. It's changed over time. But they said that the district that he drew looked like a salamander, so they started calling it a gerrymander.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that term has just kind of come to mean anything that looks like a fucking weird, like, seagull with a broken wing, like they got down in Maryland and all that stuff.
Great.
Maryland,
now I'm going to Google, like, all the gerrymandering-looking things.
There's one outside of Chicago that's super fucked up. There's one down in Maryland that's atrocious. Mm-hmm. They're all over the place. There were a couple before Pennsylvania just got redrawn a couple months ago.
Yeah, luckily the Supreme Court took some.
Yeah, the state Supreme Court decided, hey, this is unconstitutional because you're like splitting up, for example, minority
credits
communities.
Credits to the
League of Women
Voters. The reason that we have.
Yeah, there was the League of Women Voters in Fair Districts, PA, filed a lawsuit.
No. I'm laughing because I'm like, because League of Women Voters is nonpartisan.
Yeah, they're a nonpartisan
group. Democrats are demanding, you know, redraw this fucked up shit, you know?
And, you know, the idea behind why gerrymandering is successful is that, you know, and it's a trope at this point, but it allows representatives to choose their constituents instead of the people choosing their representative, which is why it's unhealthy for democracy. And that's how you end up with places like in North Carolina. They've got like veto-proof supermajorities in both houses of their state legislature. In Pennsylvania, we've got very close to that.
Well, and you'll find that when leaders don't have to fear elections, that it does not lead to productivity in any part of the party.
They get far less responsive to their constituents, and then it's just like, what does party leadership want me to do in this on this bill or
whatever? And then it just becomes about money.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. The accumulation of power and wealth.
Mm-hmm.
Not to get too fucking...
Damn money!
Yeah.
It's always about the money!
But anyway, House Bill 722 has been working its way through the Pennsylvania legislature. There are some states where they have independent commissions who redraw the lines instead of putting it in the hands of politicians who have a vested interest. And there's supposed to be like partisan balance, supposed to be some Democrats, some Republicans, some independents.
A little bit
so
everyone.
It's actually fair. And they would be the ones going through this process and drawing the districts instead of, you know, the politicians who are fighting for the districts, which has a lot of benefits. And this House Bill 722 would have changed the state constitution to create a nonpartisan citizens commission in Pennsylvania. This bill has a bunch of co-sponsors, which are like, I think it's 54% of the state house.
It was pretty impressive.
Are co-sponsors, which means it's going to pass.
Yep.
But the one committee chaired by Daryl Metcalf, fuckweed of the year, decided that they were just going to block it up and not let it come up for a vote. So the author of the bill decided, hey, I'm going to file this, what's called a discharge petition, which basically means I'm going to force the committee to vote on it so that it can go to the floor and get debated and actually voted on. What Daryl Metcalf did, this motherfucker.
It's like the Fuck Micarelli thing now. Yeah, it's Fuck Mech.
This guy has been
No, I'm just saying,
horrendous.
It's like, now it's Fuck Mech.
This guy has been horrendous for a very long time. This is the guy who said, stop touching me, I'm not a homosexual, on the floor.
That's that
fucking guy.
In that committee hearing.
Yeah, exactly. That's the same committee. It's the same committee where they just voted along party lines. All of the Republicans decided, hey, we're going to swap out what's actually in this bill for something that we wrote ourselves, and basically, effectively killing the entire bill.
Yep. Rewriting it just so that it wasn't at all what it was.
Exactly. So my thought on that is that Daryl Metcalf needs to be catapulted into the coldest river we can find. So yeah, then there have been so many people fighting for this.
Can we catapult him into the Susquehanna, right?
I mean, wherever he is, I don't know. He's from somewhere out in fucking...
We just take him to Harrisburg and catapult him into the Susquehanna.
Exactly,
it's fine.
Exactly. And if he hits City Island on the way out, you know, whatever. But
there shall he stay.
Yes. Wherever he lands, there he shall lie. But yeah, this House Bill 722 has... So many people have put in so much work for so long to try and do this. And this guy just decides, oh, no. He actually uses the argument that our government representatives should be drawing the lines because what better accountability is there than the voting booth? But the point of gerrymandering is making it so that the voting booth does not hold you accountable.
Yeah.
So it's the snake eats its own fucking tail.
Right. Right.
So, yeah, this is horrendous. We've talked a lot about gerrymandering on this show.
Well, it's just it's another effort that is at some point going to succeed if we let it or if we push for it. But it's just another, I don't want to say failed effort, because then that, you know, puts a negative connotation over the whole thing, because that's not at all, you know, where this obviously the direction points towards, you know, winning, because, you know, the Supreme Court stepped in and this is...
And the bill had enough co-sponsors that if everybody who co-sponsored it voted for it, it would pass.
So it's another severe hiccup that you might throw up during, and
a little bit of a wet burp.
Yeah. And so, you know, it's a shame how it turned out, but I think we're going to be happy with the results of this election in November.
I got my fingers crossed, but because...
Never underestimate a Democrat's ability to lose an election.
I mean...
As my dad says.
I wish I could argue with you and your dad, but I really can't. And it's supremely frustrating to me just because, like, the only way we can really fight against this right now is... Make it so that Daryl Metcalf is not the chair of that committee anymore and is not the person deciding which bills come up for a vote, which means fucking vote for more Democrats. So
it's a good thing there's a month called November coming up.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, the fact that they've done such a good job on the gerrymander that they have now means that it's going to be, you know, an uphill battle for us to get complete control.
Yeah.
You know, and obviously the party that controls the most seats is the one that ends up doing the, you know, chairing all of the committees and stuff. Mm-hmm. So really, unless we take back the entire House, which means we need to have a fire lit under all of our asses.
Yeah.
And then some.
Yeah.
And then some, and then some, and then some. Like,
yeah, exactly. And it's like,
never stop.
Yeah. How many times have we said every election's important?
Yes.
Yeah.
And then what happens between the elections? That's the other thing, right? Exactly. You know,
I this was really true after what happened with my dad. You know, it just really showed that there's an election every year. And
absolutely.
You can't miss them. And people came. Now, that one was different because everyone else on the ticket had won. And that's not me discrediting my dad. It's just the person we were running against.
I didn't even think about that.
He had been in there for 33 years, and it was just a district race. It wasn't a township-wide race.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there was actually a couple school board candidates that won by, you know, 200, 300 votes because of what came out of the first district, which was where my father had run. And he would, you know, he would never say that because, you know, he's a humble fella.
Yeah.
I am too, but not for other people. In that, I just bragged about myself. So.
Yeah, he's fine. Humble brag about your humility.
Yeah. Oh. I just, you know, I'm really humble and I'm really, you know, I like to, you know, I'm really good at being humble. And I'm definitely what I'm best at being humble.
But yeah, so Daryl Metcalf.
Fuck you. Yeah. I'll be the person that says it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And I didn't mean to run that entire conversation.
No,
but like,
no, not at all. We would kick you across the table if we felt we were, you know.
Start playing footsie.
Fair enough.
Wouldn't be the first time with this table.
Nah,
oops, see? I just kind of kicked him again.
This is a very small table, guys.
Guys, we'll span.
Guys.
It's all right.
What do you mean? The studio we're in is the most professional setting.
The state of the art. Fucking this thing. Can you hear? Yeah, you can hear the echoes. You can hear when, like,
oh, the luck.
Oh, I'm making music, dude. What?
You're fired. This is an unpaid position.
Yeah.
All right. So we'll jump from local to statewide to national.
Yes. Dun, dun,
because
dun.
Because we can't very well not celebrate.
Well, this is almost national. It's another state election.
Well, technically, but since it affects so much of the legislation.
It's statewide elsewhere.
Yeah.
But yeah.
But yeah, Profile and Courage, Paul Ryan, who probably does curls in a squat rack because he's a fucking monster, has decided that he is retiring.
For the sake of his kids.
Oh, yeah. Not because he's about to get his ass handed to him.
You said WWE.
Yeah.
Name,
the Iron Stash.
But I was
Randy
thinking more of a different industry. That is,
I mean, well, like, let's not cast aspersions here.
How do you think
you're
that...
You're so proud of yourself for
I
that.
I am. Because it's true.
Oh, man.
Yes. So the elephant in the room on that one, though, is do we think, like, he... Okay, yes. We're sure... He's not maybe going to win his reelection or would have won.
I think he's,
distancing and he's going, guess what? presidential run.
He says that he's not going to run for anything, but
they say
I trust
lots
him.
Of things.
Yeah, I trust him as far as I can fucking throw him. But
with Metcalf into the Susquehanna from a catapult.
Oh, God. No, if I trusted him as far as I can catapult him, like, I'd be in good shape. But
because I fully, like, I saw that and went, no, you're just distancing yourself now. And it's
he's so young. I mean, like, or he looks young.
Yeah, he's not. No, he's been in Congress for like 18 years.
Oh yeah, yeah. He's pushing 20.
Should have held on for another two. Yeah.
I mean, but I mean, he's just, you know, I don't know if he's got his hair dyed because it's still like jet black.
I mean,
maybe
he's got like a Dorian Gray painting up in his attic.
That's probably what's going on.
He bathes in the blood of children and it keeps his skin taut.
Like, but I think it's probably safe to presume that he's getting ready for something.
Right,
future,
right. I mean,
and
like,
that's just the thing, most logical.
Well, and that's,
you know,
again, smart. It would be how if I was a complete douchebag that, you know,
it's all it's
with
it's,
him.
It's what a stupid person would think is smart.
Yeah, he's just so evil.
Because, yeah, because whatever happens, if he decides to run for president in 2020 or for Senate or whatever he decides to do, or, you know, king of the moon or whatever the fuck he's going to do, like, what is going to come back is the fact that he has been one of the single largest enablers of Donald Trump since the election. Like, every, like,
do
you
think
know, what tweet do I have to pretend I didn't read this morning? Like, something he actually fucking said.
You know what the worst part, though, is? That would make a logical argument, right? Like, you'd be like, that's exactly why people aren't going to vote for him. But that, you know.
Well, see, I think we can. I
just go, people have been stupid enough to vote.
I think we can even take the president out of the equation. I mean, he's done so much to just hurt everybody.
Yeah, yeah.
That isn't really, really, really rich.
Exactly. He
but
says
isn't
he accomplished
that what Trump did, and he's elected.
No, no, no.
The
no
thing
I'm
is
just
that
saying
Paul
that,
Ryan,
like,
Paul Ryan says that he accomplished everything he wanted to accomplish while he was in the House, which apparently is giving tax cuts to billionaires while fucking the rest of us over.
Which Donald Trump is doing, but I'm saying he's been doing without anyways.
True.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what I was...
Yeah, Paul Ryan's been doing that since long before Donald Trump came along.
Right.
Making him potentially more evil. I don't know, but...
you know. Like, we've now gained an evil scale.
There's no way to...
Yeah, this is the guy who said
it's
he
like
was...
Scovels.
Yeah, this is the guy who said he was talking about trickle-down economics during keggers in college. Like, that's the kind of, like, this...
Paul
this,
Ryan said that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was his
what
dream. He was talking... Yeah, he was talking
what
about,
a
like...
loser.
Exactly. He's the jerk-off that stands outside of the English wing of the high school with a copy of Atlas Shrugged tucked under his arm, looking all fucking mysterious, that nobody fucking likes.
Yeah.
You know that guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Everybody took a turn being that guy for like 2 weeks. Unfortunately, Paul
Ryan.
I'd like
to see some yearbook photos of him, I bet.
No, you know exactly what he looks like.
Well, I don't know if it's nerdy or if it's jockey. What type of
he was the nerd who wanted to be the jock simply for the power.
So you're just gonna dance around my question? I see.
Yes.
No.
I'm going to give you non-answers. This is a political podcast.
Yes, I gathered.
If there's anything we're known for here at the Delco Young Dumbcast, it's for not speaking our minds.
Yeah.
At all ever.
Oh God,
man.
But yeah.
Now I'm trying to see if there was a Paul Ryan high school picture.
Well, apparently there were. They were. Oh, it'd be cool if we had cameras, then we could like put it up on a screen.
Oh dude.
It's okay.
Oh, no.
I'm not seeing anything that the listeners aren't seeing.
Oh no. Oh no.
All right. He's kind of handsome.
Oh no.
Yeah,
he's got
but...
the. He's got like the Michael J. Fox family ties thing going.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Oh,
it's okay. There's worse. Like, he doesn't have glasses or anything. What year is that from?
No, but I would assume this is his senior. 1998 from high school to his 1998. Oh, wait a minute. Yeah
no,
what?
he was elected. No, he was elected in 1998.
Hold
to
on,
the House.
Oh, wait. Oh, this one's even better. I should really
it
not be doing
from,
this.
Must be from like the 80s or
this
something.
This one's got to
yeah,
be
probably
like,
the 80s.
There's That's got to be like freshman or sophomore, okay. Right?
Just a couple of pictures of Paul Ryan. So
whatever.
Nobody feels excluded.
It's fine. Anyway,
you know,
Google. You can simulate how we're feeling. Right?
Yeah, on the visual medium that is the podcast. You know.
Well, I wanted that answered. Like in my head, I wanted to just know what that looked like, and just so I could throw darts at
probably
it.
Probably better than how my photos are going to turn out when I look back at them.
I mean,
just don't grow the hair like that.
We've all got at least you don't have like pictures of you with like a perm or something.
Yeah, I try not like to the Farrah Fawcett hair. Too dated. Like the comb over is something that's just always been and forever will be a safe, you know.
I definitely have yearbook photos with cool 90s up in the front hair.
Nice.
Like that's absolutely a thing.
Because it's cool, bro.
No, not that.
Well, so there I saw a headline, but you know, like most people on the internet, didn't read deeper than it. Then Reince Priebus was eyeing that seat, possibly.
Oh my god,
that'd be so incredible. I bet Randy is just like, oh yes, thank you. the person in Paul Ryan's district.
Yeah. Paul Randy Bryce
the opposition.
I like Randy Bryce a lot.
Yeah, he's a cool dude.
But yeah.
Is there a butt with liking Randy Bryce, or just is this a
no? No. I'm just. I think that whole, if they were trading Paul Ryan for Reince Priebus, like it's just more of the same.
Right.
It's like recycling people into Soylent Green.
Soylent Green is people.
At least Paul Ryan. At least Paul Ryan kind of looks pretty. You know, like Reince, they'd just be like, just say it. Just shovel the shit that we've been shoveling for. You know, just we don't care about appearances.
No, as we know from the protests after Ferguson, they're not allowed to wear hoodies on the floor of the house. So there would be nothing we could do to fix Reince Priebus.
Yeah, right.
Brown bag?
Poor fella.
That's what I need.
Oh, my God.
Bag. We'll cut eye holes out. It'll be fine.
Oh, man. That's harsh.
Ouch.
But not undeserved.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, you got to think,
I'm kind of uncomfortable evaluating people based on their physical appearance instead of the fact that they're evil fucking ideologues.
Yeah, that's the thing. Anybody that we've dismissed physically, it's been because they're really fucked up people.
They're already
no
like
souls.
These...
I mean, they're literally killers.
Yeah, homunculi spawned from the fucking Heritage Foundation, who decided we were very concerned about deficits. Oh, our tax cut made $1 trillion deficit increase. Let's take away the healthcare from poor people.
If we get some more cash in our bank, then a couple people die out of that. Okay, all right, fuck it, let's do it.
Yeah, we made cyanide a children's food today. Like that's fine. Like I'm not
rescinding my brown paper bag comment.
Exactly.
It's to hide his dark heart that is attached to his head.
I had the same issue though when people would make fat jokes about Chris Christie, because he's already a scumbag enough without resorting to.
I think what I just said though, right, calling them killers, that is kind of part of a problem here though, because that's such a polarizing statement to say, I would say that it's true. But not everybody feels like that. And so that's not actually how you...
I don't know.
Hold an inclusive dialogue. No, I know we have the numbers to back it
right.
up. But just to the normal person, you know, that's like, oh, dude, come on. You know, you're...
I'm of two minds about this, honestly. Like, part of me wants to say, like, there's no reason that the political right should have a monopoly on, you know, anger and fear.
Right.
But... at the same time, like, I want to be better than that. But I know that, you know...
instead of the low road or the high road, we'll do the middle road.
psychologically, though, you know, that shit... they do that shit because it's effective.
Right.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, it's terrible. I don't want to be like, oh, we should use their tactics. We should absolutely be better than that.
I mean, it's just so outrageous because I'm sure you guys have worked your polling places
of course.
A number of times.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, you can do something that doesn't even hint at giving them what they've been giving us, and they'll act like a bunch of really sad babies.
Yeah.
They get
bunch of delicate little snowflakes.
They really... but that's how they behave. My dad's primary, there was a filing error, and so he wasn't on the ballot for the primary, which was good, because it forced him to campaign harder.
Yeah.
But... so he the Republican opponent was running to be on both sides of the ballot.
Yep.
Which that's an effort that's worked before.
Yeah. And technically is legal, even though it's fucking douchey.
And so he had cards, you know, printed. It said Donald, you know, Democrats vote Donald, you know, Bonnet, and they have the same first name.
Oh.
And so, you know, we would give. Hey, are you voting, you know, would you like a Democratic ballot? Oh, yeah. Okay, actually, you know, come over here real quick. We need to show you how to write in a candidate, and we would give the rundown, and then we would hand them the lit, and they'd go in. But then, right, you know, say Bonnet was by the door or one of his workers. You know, they're, hey, you know, I'm your councilman, Don Bonnet, and here's, you know, my card. Vote for me. I'm running to be on the Democratic ballot. And they'd turn around and be like, well, hold on. Didn't we just get an explanation about you? No, that was something different, you know. Blah, blah, blah. I'm running to be on the Democratic side of the ballot. Or are you a Republican? Oh, well, I'm running to be on the Democratic side of the ballot. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. Are you a Republican? No, well, I'm running to be on the Republican side of the ballot. And so that actually sparked, that just there happened between a voter and Bonnet, Mr. Bonnet himself. Yeah. And my brother was trying to clarify to the voter, no, he's the Republican, and dude, he just lost it. He got so pissed off. How dare we clarify what party...
Telling you the truth about what's happening.
I mean, and you have to understand, it's more personal because it's, you know, our father.
But yeah,
the way he responded to his son, I mean, he screamed at my brother for really no reason.
Yeah.
And
for saying, no, you're a Republican, truth. He's a Republican office holder.
We felt validated because, you know, the voter turned around and went, what you're doing is wrong and misleading. And so, you know, we didn't go to bed really pissed off that night.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And it was a good day. You know, we beat him in his own. We actually got 14% of the Republican votes because we knew have some friends back there that I was like, hey, actually, you know what, they're registered Republicans and they're voting in the primary, you know, write my dad in, and, you know, of his own polling place during the primary, we got Republican percent of the vote to be on that side of the ballot.
That's so amazing.
You know, it was a good effort, and it, you know, that wasn't a problem. We were on the ballot for the general.
Just so you understand, I have gone through tabulations, reading through those write-ins are a nightmare.
Oh,
just so
yeah.
You know. Nightmare.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Nightmare.
Yeah.
No, I got press ganged into being judge of elections for last year's primary.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't
right?
In the first district.
I've seen them too.
Yeah.
They're tough.
Not saying not to do it, but I'm just saying, like, yeah.
Especially between two Donalds.
Yeah, I would have.
So there's Donald
been
R. Fields and there's Donald P. Bonnet. So what happens when this happened? Donald P. Fields. Donald R. Bonnet. What?
Hang on.
So, yeah, that wasn't. It was kind of a concern, especially when we saw those cards were printed out. But
of course,
Randy Bryce.
I was like, we'll go back to
you know, I don't even care. Sometimes I try to steer the conversation,
nah,
but
you know,
sometimes,
no, but
sometimes it's better to just let it roll.
But that just shows in Republicans that a lot of them don't. You call them out for something. Just becomes such a
exactly.
It doesn't compare to how you're talking to us.
Exactly And it's like,
and I one of my, you know, I have best friends that are aligned with more conservative ways of thinking, and we, personally, we'll have good, you know, dialogues.
Yeah,
it's, and so it's just working polls, though, that's a different fucking
that's fucking mud wrestling, dude.
It's really it's dirty.
Yeah. But, you know, and this is another thing that I've said on the show before. If you have legitimately held, like, conservative beliefs, that's fine. That's reasonable.
Yeah.
Those people are not necessarily Republicans.
Right.
No.
Like,
right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There's a very vast gulf of difference right now.
And so where I think people agree across the board is when there's financial backings between elected officials. Because if there wasn't, you know, a bunch of money in both parties, really, but in talking about the Republican Party, you know, it would be way more understandable, you know, but it's just how it is. It's just how it goes.
Yeah, no, and I know that you're kind of, I don't want to say pet project because that sounds dismissive, but kind of like you're one of your big areas of focus is, you know, campaign finance.
Yeah. I think it has a lot to do with it's an umbrella topic, you know. It's just everything. If you really want to cut to the bone on all these issues, then you'll take the financing behind it out.
Yeah, love of money is the root of all evil.
Yep. Well, yeah, yeah, yeah. The Bible was... No, I'm just kidding.
On our next show.
Oh, boy. Anyway, I think we are going to take a couple minutes now. Listen to the conversation that we had earlier today with Rich Laser, who is running for the 5th Congressional District. And, yeah, we actually had Amanda recuse herself from the conversation as she is working for Mr. Laser's campaign. But Noah and I had a really good talk with him. And, yeah, we'll take a listen to that now. Yeah. Rich Laser graduated from LaSalle University, then served several roles in Philadelphia's municipal government, ultimately ending up as deputy mayor for labor under current mayor Jim Kenney. He serves on the board of multiple workforce development and community service groups near his home in South Philadelphia. He's running for the Democratic nomination in the 5th U.S. House District, which includes all of Delaware County, along with portions of South Philly and Montgomery County. Rich Laser, welcome to the Delco Young Democast.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, our pleasure. Yeah, we'd like to start just by getting to know folks a little bit. So, you know, where did you grow up? What was your family like? That sort of thing.
Yeah, definitely. I grew up in South Philadelphia, kind of a block or so away from where I live now with my wife and my two kids. It was a blue-collar household, row house. You know, my dad was a – when I was little, we actually grew up with my grandmother's house first. My mother and my dad, and then we moved to our house on Wolf Street when I was about 4 years old. So my father was a Teamster at first, but then he became a sheet metal worker, and that's what he did for most of his career until he retired a few years back just because it was, you know, the physical acts of the job. But the neighborhood's very blue-collar. It's police officers, it's firefighters, it's building trades. A lot of the folks work so close to the Port of Philadelphia, so a lot of folks are ILA members, work down on the docks.
Okay.
So it's very blue-collar.
Yeah, yeah. I lived down around 9th and Rittner for a couple of years. Okay. So, yeah, very very familiar with the neighborhood.
I'm on Rittner Street now, the 100 block. That's where me and my wife live.
All right, yeah, yeah. It's a really nice place down there. Was your family kind of like active politically or civically?
Not really. I mean, they in just local elections, they would help with, you know, early on, we had a local state rep election when I was a little kid. I remember having like coffee clatches at my house my mom would have. But it was more because they were friends with the person running, and they grew up with her daughter. But it wasn't – they just were, you know, everyday folks. They went to work, came home, you know, raised me and my sister. But yeah, they were involved in our school and in community stuff, but not actively involved in politics now.
Okay. Then what was kind of like the specific moment where you connected with politics and the political process?
Yeah, I think when I was in, you know – probably like 7th or 8th grade, we really got involved. We had a playground that was typical city playground, not much grass or trees. Yeah. It was more of a concrete, you know, type with, you know, cyclone fence, but it was kind of neglected from the city just because of how many, you know, recreation centers and parks we do have, and they don't handle them all equally. Mm-hmm. But we kind of took it over. It was a group of us, actually Mark Squill, who's now a councilman. We got together, kind of created a friends group, took over the park. And I think we just, you know, we really turned it into a neighborhood hub. And then we did get assistance from the city because we were so active. The city, you know, paid more attention, and they actually invested in the park. So I think that was my first kind of like, because we had a plan. We did a grassroots organization, and it kind of came to fruition when the park kind of was invested upon, and we ran, you know, we ran all kind of activities out of there, basketball, hockey, you know, tennis. It was great. Yeah, so cool. I think that was my first kind of real entree into public service.
All right. Then, you know, let's talk about how you kind of became a Democrat. You know, was there one specific moment in your life where you realized that was kind of the philosophy you aligned with, or was it more
of a
process?
Yeah, I think it was just the philosophy I aligned with. I mean, definitely just coming from that, the neighborhood I came from was working class, blue collar Democrats always. And it still is, still one of the biggest Democratic wards in the city when it comes to turnout. And it was all because of the labor and union household. And I think as I, you know, went through school, I definitely, you know, had that labor working class background, but I just, you know, I'm very open to folks. I'm very progressive. And I think it just was, you know, old school blue collar Democrat. But then as I continued, got older, more left progressive.
Okay. All right. So, you know, I know that you sort of left a job in City Hall to run for this. So why was now the time, and why the 5th district?
When I first was running, when I first announced the intention to think about running, it was the gerrymandered districts. We knew something was going to change. You know, I had a good relationship with Congressman Brady just because of a lot of, you know, I was deputy mayor for labor. He had that role many years ago under the Good administration. So we were in the same, he would have the same, you know, support amongst labor in general. So we worked together a lot during my time with the city. And it was just, you know, I felt like, you know, I did a lot in as deputy mayor, but it was just, I felt like it was just that time. And I really, you know, with the stuff going on in Washington with the Trump administration and Republican leadership, it's just every day something was coming out to attack working families, attack collective bargaining, attack folks, just, you know, LGBT folks. It just was bad stuff. And it kind of kept me, you know, I think this is my time. And I want to just jump in and run a good, positive, progressive race.
Okay. All right. You've mentioned, you know, Congressman Brady, Mayor mm-hmm. Kenny, you know, yeah. Do you have sort of any other political mentors that have kind of helped you through the process here? Or?
I mean, I think Mayor Kenny's number one. I think, like I said, I've worked my whole career with Mayor Kenny, but also just in general, I don't think so. I mean, you know, just everyday committee people that I work with, neighborhood folks and community organizations and Whitman Council, you know, like when I came up under Mark Kapczynski, who was the president of Whitman Council. You know, I think a lot of grassroots folks I definitely admire because they're in it. It's not shiny. It's not flashy. They're doing the grunt work. So I really admire folks that do the grunt work, the hard work, that are in the streets every day doing this stuff that's good for folks. That's kind of, you know, the everyday stuff that I really enjoy.
Excellent. Yeah. Is there anything kind of surprising, especially since it's a relatively new district? Is there anything that's kind of surprised you about the 5th or about, you know, the larger campaign in general?
No, I think at first, you know, I know there was some rhetoric about, you know, this has to be a Delaware County seat. This is not a Philadelphia seat. Philadelphia has two Congress folks. We shouldn't. And I don't see that as much when I actually talk to everyday people who just want a Democratic congressperson to represent them. They just align with their values on progressive issues. And I think a lot of the stuff, you know, in South Philadelphia, Southwest, a lot of the issues that folks deal with in Delaware County, especially the working class parts. And I think we're more alike than anything. And I think it's just talking about, you know, staying above the fray on that type of dividing, because we don't mean to divide people. We want to come together. Mm-hmm. I think it's just staying above the fray on all that and actually just working and meet as many people as possible and share the vision of the campaign.
Yeah, and that was actually a question that we had. I had on the list later on was, you know, a lot of that sort of sentiment of being kind of like, you know, the we need a representative from and for Delaware County is coming from the activist groups and a lot mm-hmm. of the sort of longtime party officials.
Right.
You know, and since this is, you know, the Delaware County show, we've got Noah over here wearing his Delco shirt. You know, we want to be absolutely certain that you've got Delco, you know, top of mind, and that the residents can trust you to have their best interest.
That wasn't to intimidate you.
No, definitely. No problem. No, guess what? I mean, it's 80% of the district, and I think you got to look at this district. It's important to look at it as it's one of the most important districts in the region and also in the state because of the economic engines that are in it. But it's also, there's individual issues that each community goes through. You know, even all my time in Philadelphia, the Northeast had totally different issues than South Philadelphia, or the North Philadelphia had totally different issues than Roxborough. I think there are certain specific issues for each area or township or borough, but then there's bigger, broader issues that we all believe in, that we all want the same kind of solution for.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. So let's kind of shift gears a little bit. You grew up in a union household. You were deputy mayor of labor in a notoriously union city. Mm-hmm. About 12% of Pennsylvania's workforce is represented by unions, which is a little bit higher than the national average. But when you're just looking at workers under 35 years old, that number is less than 9%. Mm-hmm. Why do you think union employment generally and union employment among younger workers specifically has declined so much?
I think a lot of the right to work or paycheck protection or just any of that has really helped to erode the foundation. I think younger people like myself and other folks are caught in, you know, I grew up in that, so I seen how important it was and the role that I've had in public service. But I think folks are really starting to look more into that now and saying, you know what, we need to have organized labor. We need to be represented. And I think it's also, too, I think generationally things have changed. You know, Pennsylvania was a huge manufacturing state at some point, so union membership was extremely high because of those, you know, skilled manufacturing jobs. But I think the way the markets have changed and people coming out of college are not, you know, those jobs that they're going into are not always, they're not union jobs. So I think we have to really focus in on the sectors that are growing. I mean, service sectors is one of the biggest sectors in this region that's growing. And folks that aren't in a union make horrible wages. They don't have health care or good health care, and they don't have a retirement plan. And they're treated, you know, we always have the scheduling issue or, you know, the fair scheduling legislation that we always talk about. But I think it's also like, you know, how do we unionize sectors that have workers that will help build back up the middle class? Because, you know, the administration, you have, they want rich and they want poor. They don't want this, you know, middle class that keeps the foundation. But I think it's just pushing the message out there. And I think now with the stuff that's come out of Washington, I think people are seeing how much we're stronger together and we need to stop dividing each other and work for the same goals.
All right. So on your website, one of the things you talk about was a $300 million project you helped bring in from the state.
Yep.
That was designed to create something like 6,600 jobs. Yes. Over a couple of years. Can you talk a little more about, you know, what that project is and how you were involved?
Yeah, I mean, I really want to give kudos to State Rep Keller, who was my he's the outgoing state rep. He's been fighting for the port for his whole career. But was one of those things that it was such a beneficial to my neighborhood, and which one of the things that kept it so strong was because of the good jobs that came from the port. And the governor had seen that, and he committed this $300 million into infrastructure, because the port's been there for a long time, was starting to dilapidate, it was starting to, you know, break down, and you know, the piers and the bulkheads needed all that, and we needed new cranes. But I think it's all that investment that hits are now we're going to have six brand new cranes down there. We're going to have more, you know, with the dredging that's been done with the help of Congressman Brady, all these bigger ships that are coming from Asia can now come up to Philadelphia, and we can unload it. And we have some of the best, because of our workforce, we have some of the best, you know, turnaround time. We're closest to rail, closest to highway, and our man hours, the way our, you know, folks down there work hours are better, you know, turnaround time. So it's like, instead of New York where the congestion is, we get stuff out quicker. So there's been a lot of more emphasis on Philadelphia. So I think the governor's seen that, and he's invested in infrastructure and all that. And all those, because of more cargo coming in, because of the cars coming in, the container ships coming in, the port is now strategically buying up, you know, land for warehousing and distribution. So that's all new jobs that's created, and all the ancillary jobs that come just because of all this new material coming into the port.
Okay. Yeah, and those are all, you know, it seems like a lot of those are sort of more long-term jobs instead of just construction jobs.
Yep.
So that's definitely...
Yeah, they're definitely, you know, construction jobs, you know, once it starts to end, you know, you're working yourself out of work as soon as the job starts.
Yeah.
So it's definitely with these jobs, these are long-term family-sustaining jobs, $30, $40 an hour.
Excellent. All right, I get to be the bad guy this episode again. You know, we can't talk about the union stuff without, you know, bringing up the questions about your relationship with the Electricians Union.
Yep.
You know, business manager John Dougherty's been a longtime Democratic ally in Philadelphia, but he's poured a lot of money into the Republican candidates here in Delaware County. I know your wife worked for the union for a little while.
Yep.
There was even an investigation into Johnny Doc that requested some records from you with communications that the two of you had. So, you know, how would you describe your relationship with the IBEW?
Yeah, I think, I mean, I have a very strong relationship with all labor, but I did have, I mean, we worked very hard together, especially on, I mean, one thing that we made extremely important when we came into this administration was, you know, diversity of the building trades, because we have 26% poverty rate in Philadelphia. So one of our biggest issues that we wanted to tackle was, how do we get folks from our CTE schools, how do we get folks in our neighborhoods that are hardest hit by poverty into these good paying union jobs? So that's something I work very closely with John with. He's been a big proponent of our programs, and also with Ryan Boyer, head of the laborers, and, you know, Wayne Miller and Anthony Gallagher from the Steamfitters. So it's something that, you know, I think collectively we work good together. And like I said, he's from the, you know, myself, Mayor Kenny, and John all grew up, we all come from that same row house, blue collar neighborhood in South Philly. So, I mean, we have that connection. It's just about jobs. And I think, you know, I can't speak to, and I, you know, I had this conversation with some folks, and I, you know, I welcome the question because I think it's something that I should address, and that's, and I'm happy to do it. But it's also just about putting people to work, and how do we continue to grow jobs? And that's kind of the work that we really have done in the mayor's office with him and his organization.
Yeah. And I know that it's a lot of, you know, there are a lot of folks, especially that are involved kind of in Democratic politics in Delaware County that are, you know, kind of giving you extra vetting based on this issue.
Yeah.
You know, I really want to make sure that, you know, if there's something that you want to make sure that those folks specifically know where maybe they've been hurt by that money.
Yeah.
You know,
no, I definitely
lost
understand.
Elections because of that money.
No, I definitely understand that. And I think the goal, you know, hopefully I'm successful in May, and I want to make sure I help up and down, you know, the down ticket races. I think it's extremely important to make PA blue and to take more state and Senate seats Democrat. And I would like, hopefully the relationships I've built with labor over the years can, you know, can kind of unite us all under one tent, make sure we're all rowing in the same direction to get good union, working class Democrats elected, and that will help, you know, further the cause and grow union membership.
So the struggles of the Philadelphia School District are well documented, but there are school districts in Delaware County struggling for basic funding, while some others in wealthier areas have everything they could want and more. For example, Rose Tree Media is spending $10,000 more per student this school year in Upper Darby. What would you do in Washington to help eliminate the wealth gap between rich and poor school districts, especially here in Pennsylvania?
Yeah, I think you definitely have to – I think there's two – two-part answer. I think you got to go to Washington, make sure you're bringing home the resources, especially in Title I funds. Also in job training funds, because there's a lot of the job training money that comes into the different counties that through their workforce boards that I was on Philadelphia Works, all mostly federal money. I think it's making sure that money's allocated properly in areas that, you know, training actually leads to a job. I think the other big issue is, too, is just, you know, they're just like in Philadelphia, like the William Penn School District, they're not funded equitably. Just not. And that's where I think it's, you know, as the congressperson, you go to Washington to fight for resources, but you also got to work with your state and local elected officials. You have to be kind of a leader in that and pushing, helping them, you know, make sure they're bringing resources home, making sure you're putting Harrisburg on the carpet to make sure they're doing what they're supposed to do. That's it. And that's part of it. Being the congressperson is working with all the elected officials in the county to make sure everybody's rowing in the same direction, make sure you're bringing resources home, especially in the hard-hit areas. Like in Yadin, where, you know, property, the school taxes are extremely high. And people are, you know, I was out there the other day, we're talking to folks that paid their house off. You know, it's been, they work so hard in their life to pay it off, and they can't afford the taxes. And that's not fair. And you can only put so much burden on people before, you know, it just breaks.
Yeah. Yeah. You mentioned on your website that you're still, in fact, paying your student loans.
Yes.
Do you believe that the College for All Act, introduced last year by Senator Bernie Sanders and others, is the right policy? Or would you pursue different policies toward affordable education?
I mean, I think everything's on the table, but I do support that. It's just, you know, you know, my family, working class people, but, you know, they couldn't, you know, I had to take loans out and, you know, get the grants and fill out the good old FAFSA form that everybody films out, that everybody hates. And it's just, you know, I'm still paying that off. I'm probably paying it off till I'm like 50, 55. But, you know, I wanted to go to college, and that was my way to do it. And I think we shouldn't put that burden on folks that if they want to further their education. It shouldn't be about money. And college tuition is expensive. I mean, how do we rein that in? It's insane what some of these colleges cost per year.
Yeah.
And it just puts people at a disadvantage, especially folks who are in working class or don't have that kind of funds to pay for their education. So, yeah, I would support. Everything's on the table. I think we had to look at it to make sure how do we take that burden off students. But also, I definitely support that in the end.
Yeah. You also discuss universal pre-K as part of your educational platform. What was Philadelphia's plan to put that in place, and do you think it could be emulated nationwide?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, the biggest issue is where do you get the funding? I mean, you know, we had a controversial way to do that through the soda tax. It was extremely, it was one of the biggest, it was our first initiative that we put out there because we knew how important it was, how much, you know, to help the school district. You know, there was a lot of generations in the school district that got failed. This government failed because we didn't properly fund pre-K. We didn't properly fund education. We have to start in the beginning. We have to get kids when they're ready to go first in pre-K and pay for it and make sure it's good quality pre-K. And I think, you know, any way we can, you know, we give $1.5 trillion in tax cuts to corporations and millionaires, we should be able to figure out how to make sure that all children in this country can have universal pre-K and start out on the right foot.
Yeah, it's something a lot of candidates haven't really mentioned in their platforms. I've only heard it from a few others.
We want to give everybody a solid foundation to start.
Yeah.
And that's how you do it.
Exactly.
Yeah. You're one of the few candidates to express support for the Black Lives Matter movement on your website. Under GOP dominance, women, people of color, and low-income families are constantly being victimized by harmful policies like cuts to health care, restrictions on choice, biased policy, policing policies, and inequitable education funding. Enforced generation poverty and more. Can marginalized groups count on you to be an advocate and a voice for them in Washington?
Yes, definitely. You know, all those issues that you mentioned about not having good health care, about not having good paying jobs, about not having universal pre-K, about funding, you know, not being equitable across the field with education, that's all issues that we need to fix. And we need to start moving the arrow in the right direction if we want to fix these issues and we want to fight poverty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, part of the stated platform that you have as well is protection of voting rights in the state, especially for those same marginalized groups. You know, what specific policies do you think need to be put in place?
I mean, I think we got to stop the attack on the Voting Rights Act now that the Republicans slowly try to take pieces away and also in different states that we see. But I think we should make it easier for people to vote. I think you should automatically be registered to vote unless you personally want to opt out of it. I think we need to have early voting in this state. We need to make it, you know, not just the day of. I just think, how do we make it more accessible to folks and not make people scared? You know, the ID laws, you know, that's insane. I mean, that's not what voting should be. Everybody should have the right to vote equal and fair. And any policy that we can do that makes that happen, I think we need to fight for and continue to push and stop the attack on voters' rights that we have now.
So, yeah, I know that we're pretty close in age. You know, we're gearing the show towards, you know, people our age and younger. What other issues do you think that, you know, sort of millennial and the younger Generation Z voters are going to be most concerned with this coming election?
I think you know, Medicare for all, single payer. I think Fight for 15. I think, and like I said, I think educating folks on how, you know, why we need unions and why we need strong collective bargaining rights, because I think, you know, fighting for pay equity, if we had more unionized workers and we fought for more collective bargaining agreements, everybody in a union is treated the same. If you're male, you're female, you're African American, you're white, everybody's treated the same. They have the same health care, they get paid the same per hour. So I think it's all these inequities that we talked about. It's just, I think, young folks, especially even with gun control, you got the NRA pouring money in a ton of candidates to fight common sense gun control. It's insane. And I think people, you know, happened to Parkland, that people are seeing that now, and they're organizing, they're getting the grassroots is starting to come up, and they're starting to have these protests, and people are getting more involved, and people are paying attention. And I think any of those issues that we continue to help and support those organizations, we need to, and we have to fight back. And that's why I think campaign finance reform is important. It's just, you know, you have organizations like the NRA and corporations that can pour tons of money. And that's why it's important to have strong labor unions, again, because the biggest funder of Democrats is labor unions, because they fight for working people. And you take that away, you have the Janus case that's going to come out in the Supreme Court that's severely going to hurt public sector unions, AFSCME, SEIU, Unite Here, you know, and they're some of the biggest supporters of Democrats and working class Democrats. And that's a way, again, for corporations to take the voice away from people. That's why I think we need to really look at campaign finance reform.
Would you be in support of a constitutional amendment to kind of undo the Citizens United decision? Right. Easy answer.
Pretty cut and dry with that one, yeah.
Because all you do is you just create all these different, because that decision drives people in the other directions that we want to stop. And if you have, you know, you have corporations doing it, you got labor organizations that may do it, because that's the only option they have to make sure their candidates are going to be successful. How do you, I think if we do the constitutional amendment, you can stop that and undo that horrible decision at the Supreme Court.
Yeah. Well, it makes sense to me. Yeah. How do you plan to kind of keep the younger voters and constituents engaged, especially people that are going to be kind of registering and voting for the first time this election?
No, I think it's, you know, I think one thing you have to do is be extremely accessible. You have to really, you know, social media is extremely important, but I think you have to be out in areas. You can't just run, be successful, and then people don't see you for a year. You got to, I think, having town halls, you know, monthly town halls or in different areas, going out to organizations, being a part of organizations and showing up at their meetings. And I think it's just engaging people anywhere possible. You know, you got to work every day, all day, to keep people engaged, because as soon as that happens, as soon as you let people get disengaged, that's when you have issues like we have now in Washington. Yeah.
Man, monthly town halls, Pat Meehan must
you
be gotta rolling
take it.
In his
political
grave.
You know, as a public servant, that's you work for the public. You work for the constituency. They don't work for you. So you got to, if they're mad at you for something, you got to take it on the chin. I mean, that's part of the job.
Yeah, no, makes sense. But yeah,
some people don't do that, but that's part of the job description.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And if anybody's not willing to do that, that's what we're here to fire them.
He's done running. You shouldn't run.
Yeah, absolutely. Rich Laser, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Hopefully I can come back soon.
Thank you. But honestly, I suffered from it as well. You see on Facebook, evil union GOP installment candidate. You know, it's pretty nasty stuff.
Yeah, it's crazy.
But then I'm like, you got to read about it.
Yeah, you got. I think going and meeting people as much as possible was very helpful.
Yeah.
Because people see that you're not. It's like even the forums, as much as there's so many forums.
Oh, yeah, that first one, Beatty kicked it off. Like, we don't need the GOP installment. Actually,
God. That was the craziest one with the waffles.
Just got it. Oh, yeah.
That was the wildest one. I remember that.
Too. I think being dispelling those things is kind of.
Yeah, I don't come off as just like aggressive.
No, yeah, definitely not.
Look, I'm like, wait a minute. Did he hear that?
No, I think it's just like I said, meeting many people, going to the forum. I think people that dispels a lot.
Yeah.
He does
hide
under your bed at night. You didn't know that?
And even just having a conversation with people.
Yeah,
you know,
it's all it
that's
is.
All, that's all yeah, it takes all it is, you know, sitting down and, you know, talking with people and figuring them out a little bit.
Yeah, well, it's a shame social media kind of dehumanizes when its goal is to humanize and encourage social. I'm not crying, by the way. The cats are just. I'm not,
yeah.
This isn't making me emotional.
I know. I thought I was. You know.
No, I'm not.
So those answers were so beautiful.
No. I just, you know, and so it works. It's supposed to work for you, but it works against you.
It is now time for everybody's absolute least favorite part of life. What did millennials kill this week? Yeah, we need some theme music for this, I think.
I wonder if we have anyone that can write that.
Anyway. Maybe. Maybe somewhere. I don't know.
Are you guys hinting at
if he doesn't have a bad attitude.
Innate musical. I'm going to write some doom metal for this.
Yes. Yes. Please, just bust out an 11-string guitar. Jug, jug, a jug. In, like, drop H tuning or some shit. I don't
Wow.
Know. Yeah.
Go after the...
we're going for the brown note.
Yeah, okay. All right.
Anywho.
We go outside of the musical alphabet. It's
exactly,
so heavy.
Exactly.
Wow.
Exactly.
What have we killed? Do you like, what bringing you in? What have we killed?
Yes. What millennials have done, and this was a thing that I didn't even know was a thing. Millennials have killed the flat bed sheet.
So you say flat bed sheet.
That thin sheet that matches with the fitted one that goes on the actual mattress.
It hugs it, it has that elastic band in it.
No, so the flat sheet, the one that the thin one that's like the same color that comes in the bag with it, that goes basically between you and your comforter blanket or whatever.
So they haven't killed bedspreads? Or is that with...
Are we using the same term? No. The super thin one.
That just goes on the mattress itself?
No. I'm wondering if his house...
Maybe. Dude.
I don't think he knows what it is.
Yeah. I don't know,
it's not a bad thing.
This is fine. But
this actually would just prove, apparently, killed it.
My understanding is mattress, that thing, and then bed sheet, and then sheets, and then comforter.
Mattress... The fitted sheet with the elastic on it.
Okay.
And then there is what we're calling the flat sheet.
And then your comforter.
And then your comforter. Maybe we need some diagrams. Oh, dude.
We need some diagrams.
Now, actually...
My parents aren't millennials. Like, I mean, so what happened, like, for years, we just had the little mattresses, but then off Wayfair, we bought, like, you know, Tempur-Pedic... Okay.
What we're doing, I'm pausing the recording, we're going upstairs and we're figuring this out.
Okay, yeah.
Okay, so... we're good.
Yeah, I have one.
Okay,
have one.
Awesome. I got scared.
Yeah.
All right, so apparently...
I thought I was fitting a stereotype that I didn't even know.
Just accidentally.
I'm going to mess this up anyway, so it'll be... No. So, go ahead, read.
No, apparently, reading from a USA Today article from March 28th, after millennials apparently disowned bras, chain restaurants, and napkins, a new question has emerged. Do you really need a top sheet on your bed? In some dark corners of the internet, some say they're tearing it off. While some appreciate the top sheet, the flat sheet placed atop sleepers to keep blankets on the other side clean, others see it as an unnecessary addition that just ends up tangled at the end of the bed.
Hmm.
Basically, it just goes on to say that, like, people don't care about this, they're just putting, like, the...
So, the beginning of that article is interesting. It says they've killed napkins, bras, and chain restaurants, you say?
Oh, yeah. There is a cottage industry of keeping track of
I use napkins. Typically, sometimes I'll eat at chain restaurants, and I do wear bras, so I don't know if this is applicable. No, I don't wear them, but maybe I need them.
So here's my take on it. Does my bed have one? The fitted sheet? Yes. Now here's where we're going to mess it up. I specifically don't put them on my kids' beds.
That's fair.
What do they do? They exactly what that said. It rolls up. So when you were wondering about it, I went, this is what my kids are going to be like. Like, they're never going to know that there's another sheet that comes in the package.
You're going to have to wash that comforter
or whatever.
How could you strip
them of that God-given right of the second... wrong.
Hold on. Wrong podcast.
Sorry, I got on the wrong topic there.
So, well, to be fair, they're kids, so I wash their whole bedding constantly.
If you're going under the assumption that everything gets gross all the time anyway, then, like,
that's pretty
whatever.
Much, yeah.
But I...
So, you there do... Are two types is of, it a barrier for you?
Yes. There are two types of people on the planet. People who shower at night and people who shower first thing in the morning.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I am a person who showers first thing in the morning.
Yes.
Okay.
So, you know, the correct way.
Yes.
So that you can wake up and ease into your day.
Yes, absolutely. No, that's so true.
Yes.
And you got to go on the bedhead.
Exactly.
No.
Exactly.
No, there's yeah.
I like what's happening. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
No. But if I did not have that flat sheet that's very easy to wash in a home washing machine, then I would have to jam like all of those thick comforters into the washing machine way more regularly so that they didn't like get gross.
Which I agree. Which is why I have one on my bed. My kids, well, who are going to be dirty the way that they are already.
I kind of alternate using it throughout the night. So, like, I don't know if it actually all adds any protection to the comforter.
Because it ends up
that's the thing, though.
Yeah.
I'll throw all of the blankets off at the same time if I'm going to do that.
Mm.
Or if I just need a little something, I've got that little thin flat sheet.
But I do realize I might actually be building this. You know what I mean? So, like, my kids are going to be like, what's a fitted sheet? So and I'm going to be like, son of a bitch, God. I actually created the problem.
I hate it.
My 14-year-old does, actually.
But does he?
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Yeah, I need to start actually, like, vetting these before I bring them to you guys. Because sometimes I find out horrendous information.
I know,
like,
I'm so sorry.
You're raising your children wrong, apparently.
In all honesty,
this is kind of a funny topic, but the first time I read it, I was like, oh, that's fucking dumb. I don't want to talk about that. But then, like, we got into it, like, that's, huh.
Actually,
exactly.
Now I know.
Now we can write 500 think pieces about it, because...
A real think tank we got going here.
Yeah, exactly.
Sure. I mean, I like mine, and I don't even know, you know, if I would ever not put one on, but just for the sake of my kids not, you know, getting tangled up in it, or, you know, it gets thrown off or whatever, I just stopped putting one on. So yeah, I'm perpetuating the unfortunate. What are they considered, though? Are they Gen Z?
I think so.
The older one would probably be Gen Z.
Are these established, though? Generation Z and millennials. There hasn't been an established, like,
actually
cutoff.
There's now that right I realize now, that he's 3 years younger than you.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I would
the podcast is over.
I would say I'm a millennial, but I'm 17.
Yeah, millennials.
But my birthday is 6 months after the New Year, so I'm in the 2000, if that's the cutoff.
It's weird.
I don't know if it is.
It's
like,
weird.
Obviously, these things are always like real fucking
loosey
back
goosey.
Of the... Yeah, hand wavy. Yeah.
We
no,
just
like,
all know that we're not Gen X and we're not baby
that,
boomers.
Like, comes to these conclusions, you know, like the WHO or something.
Exactly. But, you know, I know basically if you're what I've been using is
UN.
If you're between like 25 and 35-ish.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
That's millennial.
Okay.
And,
if you're,
like,
if you're younger
end.
Than that, you're, like, Generation Z, and then, you know, kids who are, like, in elementary school now or something different. But, you know, that's kind of... and, again,
is
that's
that
kind of
cannon?
Like the you know...
Kind of official belief, but kind of it's not really...
Yeah, that's my sort of, like, loose definition.
That's what we're going with.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Ernie, millennial is a cool name, though, and I was born in the new millennium, so I therefore identify
Own
as
it.
A millennial.
Own it. There you go.
Get
I
it.
Like that.
Get it.
That's
Get
awesome.
It. So, yeah. Flat bed sheets.
And Amanda, apparently, just...
How dare you? How dare you?
It's okay.
Child Protective Services is on their way now.
For fitted sheets.
Yes, Warren Bryan.
Oh, man. Thank you so much for having me on this. In all seriousness, I had a great time throughout the day.
Yeah, no. We still gotta kind of bring it down gently.
Oh.
So we will...
No, I'm just kidding.
So what we always like to do is, because self-care is important, talk about something that we've enjoyed over the past couple weeks.
Sorry.
Something we've enjoyed over the past couple weeks that has absolutely nothing to do with politics.
Cool.
That's smart. I've got the easy one this week.
I was just
gigantic vacation.
You go?
Yeah, it was absolutely incredible. If for those of you who have never traveled, like, it's very possible to do it for not that much money. Like, my wife and I, we splashed out a little bit. We took 2 full weeks. We went to Italy and we did it big, and we still didn't spend a ton of money. Like, if you're careful with airfare and you use like Airbnb or stay in hostels instead of like, you know, the 5-star hotels
and
shit like
did?
That. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
I love it.
Yeah, it's not that expensive, and you get so much perspective, and you see so many things that, like, the city of Venice is, like, you know, spitting in the universe's eye. like, somebody decided, you know what, fuck it. We're going to put a city here in the middle of a lake, and we're going to make it last 2,000 years, and it's going to be way fucking shinier than anywhere on the planet.
Does it look the way that
it
looks?
It's amazing. It looks... It
you
look,
know what I mean?
It
like,
actually
when
looks
you
like
see
that.
Pictures, and you're like...
Yeah, no, it actually looks like that.
I love it.
And it's literally just standing on logs that they drove into the lake bed.
It's crazy like, on so many levels.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I love it.
Like, it should not exist. And if global warming, you know, doesn't get stopped, it might not exist in 100 years.
Mm. And I'm never going there because my theory is between that and... California, the moment I step in them, they're going down. Like, so Amanda's not allowed to go to Venice.
But no matter where it is, just go somewhere. Mm. Even if it's like, figure out a national park that you want to go to and go check it out, you know, because there's no guarantee that this shit will be around forever. And there's no guarantee that we will be around forever. So figure out a way to go and see some shit, whether it's inside this country or outside of it, while you still have the opportunity.
And we should have kept you for... last on that because that was so inspirational and serious.
Yeah,
no
yeah.
Like I mean now I'm like
no hold on,
damn it,
we'll
I need to go
it. Just
yeah
we'll switch it around.
I mean, yeah, we could theoretically do that.
Okay,
so who's
I
got...
think you should. That's a really strong
who's got another one? Cool.
You get to go.
so do I have to relate this so that it's like a helpful message to people, or just
not
something
necessarily.
That I
just
like...
something cool, a really good sandwich you had. I don't give a shit.
Okay, well, I'm doing this show at my high school, and I'm not too big in the theater or theater music, but I get along really well with the music director, and so we both kind of do that. And that's not really his main thing either. But I'm doing the show, and my girlfriend's a lead in it, and
awesome.
I'm playing in the Pit Orchestra.
Nice.
And
which show?
It's Bye Bye Birdie.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah,
I did Bye Bye Birdie when I was a sophomore in high school.
What'd you play?
Shit, what's the name of...
Were you in percussion?
No. I was
actually
in
the production.
The cast, yeah. I was
wow,
in the cast.
Wow, look at that.
The dude's father.
Hugo.
Fuck.
Oh, okay.
I don't even remember
McAfee,
the name.
Mr.
Yeah,
McAfee.
Yeah, Mr. McAfee. That was
yep.
it. But, yeah.
I think it's Harry, maybe.
Yeah, sounds familiar. Yeah,
Harold McAfee. Yeah, okay. I don't really. Wow, I'm in it. I don't even know. That's all right.
But yeah, that's an awesome show.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. And there's a couple cool guitar tunes in it, and it's nice. And that's, you know, between the politics and the school, you know, it's just like that's how I, you know, I'm able to keep something, you know, active that I really
right.
like.
Awesome.
And up until this point, I was viewing it as I can either do music or I can do something in, you know, community work or whatever. But now I've come to that conclusion that I can do both and be happy and dedicate the same amount of time to each.
Absolutely.
That is awesome.
That's
thank
excellent.
You.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to be like completely, and I want to make sure it's the Super Nintendo. Thank you. I had a complete meltdown there. Link to the Past. I'm talking. Did you ever see the I think it was a commercial where the parents have the bowl of Fruit Loops and they're eating the Fruit Loops and they're playing. I think it's the original Nintendo in it.
Yeah, that's
literally
the old school
what
NES,
I have been doing when I have been able to get any time free. Because what is it? You just sit there and you mind dump, and it's hilarious. I haven't played this game probably for a solid 15 plus years, right? And I'm literally like, I remember everything. Yeah. I know where to go and. So yes, video games.
I have Ocarina of Time in my N64 in the living room right now. So
you have no idea how much every time I walk past that I just want
to
be like, and he's not paying attention. I'll just sit down real quick and play. So yeah, video games
that's
have
amazing.
Been my thing.
Amazing.
Cool.
I know. It's all good. It's not as inspirational maybe,
no,
but I'm
fun.
Like video
they're
game
fun.
Brain dump, we're good.
Do
you
it.
Know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do it.
Yeah.
So I encourage video games.
Within reason.
Mike, you know, you're good. You encourage awesomeness.
Yeah.
He's encouraging awesomeness. I'm like, video games.
Video games are a form of awesomeness, as long as you don't...
They're so
yeah.
fun. They're
exactly.
fun.
But it, you know what's... is it funny that, like, we go back to them? Like, you know, like, I have an original Nintendo. I have the N64. I have the SNES. And then, of course, we have, like, you know, the newer ones and whatnot.
Yeah.
But I love this, like, the 8-bit graphics.
I got my NES got stolen by not even by a roommate. A roommate moved a bunch of stuff out onto the front porch so that he could clean the house, and somebody walked away with my NES.
Oh my God, no.
So we
Why
have,
would he do that?
I don't fucking know. But I have we have in the house Amanda's NES, my Sega Genesis, my N64, Amanda's Xbox.
I love it.
And we got one of those. We got one of those 3-in-1 systems that'll play.
Do they work well?
If you really want, they're fine. If you really want to connect with what's referred to as Generation Z, Fortnite, bro.
But my
I don't do any like online stuff at this point.
Let me
like,
tell you, I have seen this played.
Fucking old people.
No, yeah, I've seen him play this.
I'm fucking old as shit. How many gray hairs you see in this beard,
not
man?
Too bad, not too bad.
But in all fairness, I've seen him play this, and I holy crap.
That's
it's really kind of like, I mean, so it's do you know what the premise of it is?
I don't.
So it's kind of... It's
Minecraft GTA.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus.
Yep.
Right? He's running through. He's like, I've got to... And he's building as he's fighting, and
he's
like...
He's building as he's killing people.
Right. And I'm like, oh my God. How the hell does he do... Like, I mean, that's... It's amazing, and I know I'd be, like, motion sick by the time I was done playing.
It's really impressive when you get... Like, my little brother is so good at it, and I'm like, oh.
I'm just happy the 7-year-old knows to blow on the...
Yes.
On the cartridge okay. to put
take,
it in.
I take back everything I said about you not teaching your kids, right?
Yeah. There we go. There
it
we
makes go. Up for the fitted sheets.
Exactly. All right. I think that's a good spot to stop for this episode of the Delco Young Demicast. I want to thank the band Tin Mouth for letting us use their song Generation to Generation as our theme song. I want to thank Rich Laser for coming to hang out with us. I want to thank you, Noah, for coming to hang out with us for the first time.
Yay, Noah.
Yeah, super fun.
Yeah, please check us out on Facebook at Delco Young Demicast. Check us out on Twitter at DY Demicast. You can email us if you want to. All of our addresses are on the website. DelcoYoungDemicast.com.
Except for mine.
Yeah, exactly. All the important. No, that's, ouch. That hurts. That hurts.
True with the moment.
Anyway.
You'll be back, Noah. It's all right.
Yeah, we'll have you back at some point, Noah. But yeah, thanks to you guys all for listening, and we will see you next time. Take care.